Welcome back, everybody, to the Abundant Journey podcast. As always, I'm your host, Nick James, along with Nick Offenkamp. It is a new week. We have a new guest on today. But Nick, how are you?
Hey, I am doing very well. We had a bright, sunny weekend, feeling rested, ready to hit the week hard. And always the best way to start off a week with you and one of our amazing guests. So I'll throw it back to you to introduce our guests, but really excited to be on together here.
Absolutely. Super pumped to have you guys listen in and join us today. We are hanging out with Lee Nugent. He is a real estate investor. He lives in the great state of Florida, which is total polar opposite corners from where we are in Washington State. But Lee has an awesome story, both in terms of his journey on entrepreneurship and on top of that, the different things he's got his hand in. So I'm excited to get into his story. Lee, thanks for hanging out with us. How are you?
Man, it's another day in paradise. So just got back yesterday from a small 4-day cruise. Went down into Key West, hit Bimini Island, and it was great to just really kind of unplug and relax and let the emails stack up. So now I'm spending the day, you know, just getting caught up before I go out of town again.
Hey, that's the sign of a good vacation, that they actually did stack up and that you weren't having to check things or respond to them while you're away. That's fantastic. And where in Florida is home for you?
So I'm actually in Naples, Florida. So if you know where Miami is, just go west until you hit the water.
Okay. Fantastic, man. And how long have you been there?
Coming up 2 years, April 17th. So we moved Easter weekend 2 years ago. And it's been just couple of really, really great years as far as like challenging growth. And it's definitely been something, which I'm sure we'll talk about.
Yeah, 100%. And I know Nick did a bit of an intro, just kind of broadly what you're into. But if somebody is just walking up to you off the street, meets you and is like, hey, what do you do? What's your answer?
My answer is generally, what do you need? Because one of the things is, it's not necessarily in what I do, but who I connect with, right? Like Brad Lee said at one point, and it's just been impactful to me. It says, the more hands you shake, the more money you make and the more impact you have, right? So that being said, you know, I love to connect people and say, oh, okay, well, what do you need? You need this? Great. And if that's within my wheelhouse, I'm there. But for the most part, I tell them I'm a real estate investor who happens to be licensed in two states, and we own a number of small businesses related to real estate investing. And most recently, I'm becoming a fund manager.
Fantastic.
Well, and you know, I love how you start with that. And the more and more I dive into this world of networking and relationship building amongst business and just good people, that is a highly undervalued skill that people don't realize, is just the ability to connect people and solve problems. And you can make a lot of money doing that too.
You really can. And I believe one of the main things is to learn to not see yourself as the main character, you know, per se. You can always be the main character in your story, but realize that you're an NPC to so many other people, right? There's 7 billion souls on this planet, and we only are real to somebody else when we're in front of them or whenever that thought crosses the mind. So in knowing that, make your connections less about you and more about the people you're connecting to, so that you can make more quality relationships in that stance.
That's so good. And that's, you're already dripping with wisdom for us, Lee. So thank you. Well, let's,
yesterday I was dripping with sweat. So, you know, I'll take this.
Fair enough. Hey, we'll take the wisdom piece. Well, let's dive into your story a little bit. And, you know, we like to go back as far as you want to, but we want to hear your journey. What got you into being an entrepreneur, being a real estate investor? So I don't know if that started with a family member. Did you grow up in a household of entrepreneurs, or what did that look like?
Not necessarily. You know, my family, growing up as a child, my family had, they kept the ends met and sometimes tied, but not all the time, right? So we grew up country poor, dirt road poor, just depending on what kind of terminology you want to use. But there were times we didn't have electricity growing up. I've had to go hunting with my father at night so that we would have meat on the table the next day. And it wasn't ideal. And that being said, I also understand that people have had it way worse than I do. So I'm still thankful for what I did have. Mm-hmm. The challenge about that was that, you know, my parents, they worked extremely hard, but they just didn't understand financial literacy. So that wasn't a skill set they really passed down to us. It was more so, hey, look, if you go and you deposit this check over here at this store on this day, you've got all these days before they go to make that deposit at the bank again. So those are the kind of things that we learned growing up, is how to stretch it and, you know, make those things happen. But I would say that it was only after my parents had passed away, my father in 2007, my mother in 2014, did it really just kind of hit and impact me that, hey, look, life is shorter for some, longer for others. You know, I don't know where mine lasts, but both of my parents had 54 years on this earth. And that's where you can call it existential crisis, you know, to where it's just like, you know, what do I do? Who am I doing this for? What am I leaving behind? And that kind of really spurred me into just starting to see things differently. You know, all right, so am I going to work 30 years for somebody, be unhappy about it, and hopefully retire with a pat on the back and a gold watch? Or am I going to, you know, start to do something a little bit different and set my wife, my family up in the event that if I don't have a long lifespan, what's going to take care of them? And that's where that rabbit hole, you know, started to take me.
Yeah, that's we've had a number of folks on that have kind of a similar story arc, and they've been some of the most inspiring stories. So as you start to see this rabbit hole, the existential sort of crisis that you mentioned of just realizing, all right, I got to redirect what I'm doing with my life. That's a pretty broad and deep rabbit hole that can go a whole lot of different directions, right? As far as entrepreneurship. And so how did you start to choose a particular path that you wanted to go down?
So one thing about me is I've never been afraid to quit a job. So let's go ahead and just put that out there. It's on the table.
Yeah.
And I was working for a company that, you know, well, back it up a bit further. When I met my wife, I was working at the casino. And I was a poker room supervisor, graveyard shift. So nights, weekends, holidays, you don't get to see me. You know, you're over there, you're putting in the work because the casinos don't close. Mm-hmm. And after getting married, my wife was like, you know what, this is not going to be good long term. So mm-hmm. I started putting out my resume and having no marketable skill set that, you know, would really suit corporate lifestyle. I ended up taking an $8 an hour pay cut just to go break into an office in customer service. And it was a logistics company, and it was great. So within 6 months, I was able to get promoted into account management. And then about a year later, I got promoted into sales. That's where, you know, I started looking around, seeing that these people were making some incredible money. I wasn't one of them. I was on this new program where you get kickers and spiffs rather than commission. So after about a year of that, to where I'd built up some experience, remember, I wasn't afraid to quit a job. So I go and I start shopping on my resume. I get a job offer, and, you know, I really enjoyed the company that I worked with. So I told them, hey, look, I'm leaving. Here's my 2-week notice. We've already tried talking about this. And at that point, you know, the owner's son, who was my direct supervisor, he was like, I think we should have had this conversation a little bit more seriously. And I said, I wish we could have, because one thing that, you know, that has always stuck with me is if you tell somebody you quit, there's no coming back across that bridge, right? Because there will always be that over your heads, you know, and there's always going to be that uncomfortable air. So once you make the decision, just follow through. So I did. I left, and I went to go sell commercial tires. So these tires that you see on 18-wheelers, earth mover equipment, those larger commercial things, sorry, I'm losing my track of thought. So your earth mover equipment, like those big Tonka trucks that you see, those are what I went in to sell. And let's just say expectations and reality didn't line up. So a year later, I'm sitting here like, all right, where's that resume? Let's dust it off.
Yeah.
And just to speed things up, I found a company that they wanted me to go in and I would sell their coaching product. However, I needed to buy it first before I could sell it. And that set off some red flags. So I started researching the company, reading reviews, and the guy changed my life. Don't even remember who it was. And it just said, this company has great information. The course teaches you valuable things. However, it's nothing that you wouldn't learn at your local library. And that course happened to be about real estate investing. So, you know, I barely graduated high school, but I do have a master's in Google and YouTube. So I started going over there and just like learning, right? Yeah. And about 3 months later, I'd finished up this course, and it was a real estate wholesaling course by Phil Putiovsky. I hope I pronounced your name right, Phil. If you ever see this, I apologize in advance. But he was impactful. Whenever I say that he gave away so much value in his videos and so much content that I was like, oh, wow. I had the confidence at that point to move forward. So I looked at my wife and said, you know, hey, look, I want to take $1,000 and, you know, start wholesaling real estate. To which her response was, you know, hey, why don't we just go to the bank, see if they'll approve us for a loan. And if they will, let's just buy a rent house or two. And if you want me to continue that part, that was almost comical because when my wife met me, I had a 450 credit score. So, you know, over the years it had improved because she taught me financial literacy, which she learned from her mother. So long story short, the bank approved this. And, you know, we got $150,000 that we were able to go and buy some houses with. And that's what we did. And that's when the fun started, you know, so it has become just this crazy journey ever since.
I mean, I want to hear all about the fun, obviously. I want to get there. But just before we do, I think you bring up a really interesting point, something that we haven't talked with many others about, and that is the fearlessness to quit a job, which I think a lot of people might struggle to relate to that. Like a lot of people that I talk with, you know, they feel whether it's a deep loyalty to a company or whether it's just the fear of stepping out from a position that they're comfortable in. And so they stay there, and all of a sudden 1 year turns into five and then it turns into 10. And it's kind of like, where's the time gone? And so I am curious just if you want to unpack that just a little bit further of the psychology of, you know, why do you think you haven't been afraid to quit? And maybe what encouragement would you give to others that kind of feel this like, I'm not really loving what I'm doing. I think there's other opportunities out there, but can I quit my job?
Yeah. So there's a couple things that go with this. Number one, if you're watching this and you have a W-2, watch the way a company handles somebody that passes away at your company. And if that company, you know, takes time to grieve and help support the family and everything else, then fantastic. You probably have a great culture. Stay with that. However, if somebody passes away at your company and the next day the job's posted, maybe your value to that company isn't as much as you may feel that it is, right? Mm-hmm. So that's where I think a lot of people could identify that. And once you know this and you notice that, that's going to really tell you a little bit about, is this really my long-term plan? For me personally, being that I never came from anything, it's not like it was unfamiliar territory, right? So if something happened and we lost it all of our, at the time, our net worth, whenever we applied with the bank, by the way, was $138,000, which most of that, and when I mean most, was my wife's 401k. You know, so that being said, if we'd lost it all, was it this, you know, insurmountable hill that you can't climb again? No. Even today, you know, because once you get the skill set to do something, if it can be done, it can be duplicated, right? So that's where the fear really wasn't there for us, especially starting out. Because, you know, for me, I think the bank should have been more fearful. You know, I'm like, they lent me money, you know, so I didn't really have anything to worry about. Plus, I didn't use any money. We started with $6,000, right? But I didn't actually use any money to get into these deals. You know, we had negotiated well enough to where the equity was there. The bank financed the full purchase. So we walked in day one with equity, with value, and, you know, all the upside, none of the downside. Yeah. So that's where I would say the fear wasn't there in that regard. These days, have you ever heard the saying, new level, new devil, right? I think these days it's, as I'm moving into some of these larger spaces, I do have challenges. I'm not going to lie about that. But starting out, no, that fear wasn't really there, because it was just, hell, I was broke, born, you know, so why not be ready to take a chance?
Well, yeah. And one thing that is interesting as you share, I heard in your story this continual, what's the next step? And I think a lot of times it can be easy for entrepreneurs to think 15 steps ahead, but education clearly played a significant role in your journey, because you realized even when you were at the casino, hey, I don't have these skills, or I don't know how to do this. And so each step along the journey, you were able to upgrade. What other significance has education played to get you where you are today?
I think education is a large component. You know, I think action is the bigger component. It's because education, you can't help but learn when you take action. Mm-hmm. Not if you're going to stay in the game long term. Mm-hmm. Quite frankly, I can sit here and I can learn about all these different aspects. I'm sorry if I'm looking around. I've got like four monitors. Over the years, my workstation's evolved. But all that to say, you know, I can have YouTube over here learning about this skill set. I can have Simon Sinek over here doing a TED talk about public speaking. And I don't necessarily feel that formal education is the gauge of somebody's intelligence. And I used to let that limit me so much whenever I would go around people, quite frankly, because I didn't do well in school. I was a below C average student, barely graduated from high school whenever I said that. So education was always something that, believe it or not, I shunned, you know, and it was that willful ignorance that I had. I knew enough about what I needed to, but I never developed that curiosity until I took action into the real estate space. And then there's just something that clicked about it, you know, something about that problem solving and putting this puzzle together whenever all of the pieces are just scattered, you know, and then one's missing. Right. So to still go over there and complete that, I think that's what really counted. More so the curiosity over the education, but then the action is where it really hits home for me. Is you'll figure it out along the way, so long as you're curious and flexible. But yeah, education is important, but I would say the action takes precedence.
And that's what I'm hearing, like, is unique about your experience. A lot of, for lack of a better term, the wantrepreneurs, the people that want to start their own business or get into real estate investing, whatever it is, I think it's easy to binge on a whole series of YouTube videos and then go over to Instagram and binge on a whole series of reels and, you know, flood your mind with all kinds of theories about how to become successful and what to do. But it sounds like your approach, I love that line about your master's in Google and YouTube, but it sounds like your approach has been very applied, of that it's like, I want to do this thing, or I want to build this thing, or I'm stuck at this particular point. So I'm going to watch a lesson about how to get unstuck, and then I'm going to go and actually do that, and then move on until the next sticking point. Is that a fair way of describing like your approach to an applied education?
It is. It's quite simply because of the thought process that I wasn't born running. Well, I mean, I still don't run, let's be honest, but I wasn't born running. You still had to like learn to crawl and then stand and then walk. But you'll never learn those things if you don't at least take some kind of action. You're going to have to, you know, bump your butt on the floor a couple times before you learn that you need left foot in front of right, you know, to make these things happen. But I think a lot of people that you call the entrepreneurs, there's always this desire for more. You know, I don't know what places that desire in the human psyche, but it's there for everybody. But I think that what's missing is the catalyst, you know, for a lot of these people. I always tell people, you're always one bad day from changing your life. And that could be great. That could be very poor, you know, but that bad day could come from a new supervisor getting appointed and you knowing that you cannot spend the next 10 years working under this person. Right.
Yeah.
But that catalyst has to happen. And for me, I believe a lot of it was losing my parents at such a young age. And seeing that both of them, even though they were born years apart, they lived to 54. And that was my catalyst to where it was just like, man, I got to get on it. You know, I was 34, 35 at the time. And, you know, I just, yeah, I couldn't bear that thought of leaving my family in a worse condition, you know, for having stuck around me. So the entrepreneurs out there, you're just simply, you haven't experienced your catalyst yet. But don't worry, one day you will, and you're going to have to answer the call, or you're going to have to resign your facts to, or resign your life to that what if, what could have been. And just to tie that down, Nick, one person in this training that I did, they said, look, at the end of your life, imagine the you know, that could have been, comes and sits at your bedside and tells you about all the amazing things you could have done. And you have to listen to it. Isn't that a version of hell? You know, I mean, what would that be like if you go out there and you have to know what you missed simply because you chose not to take action? And that was, man, that was like a fire, you know? So,
yeah. Oh, that's a good word. I love that.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and that, man, that's a lesson for life, or a quotable thing to throw on the mirror there, I would say. But let's keep going here on your story. And so you dove into the wholesaling. Talk a little bit about what that is to our maybe listeners who don't know. And then, you know, what did the early years of that look like? You had access to some money with the bank. You learned on what wholesaling was, and then you started going from there.
Yeah. So, and for transparency, I didn't actually wholesale until a few years after, you know, so it was just, it was kind of funny how it went, because the bank financed us. And being that that's the case, now I focus on educating people on how to wholesale. Yes. So that they can get started, so that they can stack some money, but more so how to use private money to purchase properties, how to flip, how to, you know, hold their rentals, and then exit out with a refinance under a DSCR product, so it's not so much weight under their personal finances. But yeah, I would say that the rentals is where we started, and the wholesaling just happened to be a byproduct of an opportunity a couple of years later.
Okay. Now, what did that look like those first? Oh, sorry, I was just going to ask what that looked like with those first few properties that you bought. Because, I mean, that sounded like that was a pretty exciting thing of being actually getting your surprise at getting approved for the loans. And so I'm curious, you know, what year that was, just to kind of anchor ourselves and our listeners in sort of where we were at market-wise, and then what geography, where you were investing, and what kind of properties you were going after first.
Yeah. So we focused on our backyard, right? Because number one, it's a great rental market. This was in Shreveport, Louisiana, just for a geographic context. I don't know that this would work as well up in Washington, you know, just because of the disparity in property value. but all that to say, we started out, found a duplex, and my wife and I, we still go back and forth about who found which duplex first. I found one. She found one that admittedly is better. I'll give her that. Right. So we're going around and we're looking, and I find this duplex. It's a 1-1 on each side. So one bedroom, one bath on each side. And they were renting for $400 a month per side. And I'm like, I don't like the rents. But the fact that, you know, they wanted $45,000 kind of attracted me. I was like, I could probably do something with. So I started looking, and I'm like, all right, I could increase the rent. Market rent over here in the area is $500 a month. So that's $200 more, you know, that I can make, and I can negotiate, right? So we ended up buying it for $35,000, and it appraised for $53,000. Going back to the bank, remember, they would give me 80% loan to value. So because of the equity that was there, I was able to purchase that property, nothing out of pocket. Wow. The other property, the cooler, the sexier property, was the one that my wife had spotted while we were looking at another duplex across the block. And as we're coming out from that building, which should have just been a teardown, let's just call it what it is, she looked across the way and she's like, wow, I wish that house was a duplex. And our realtor, who's now one of my business partners, he's like, well, it is. I wonder. And then he goes and he looks it up, and it was entered into the MLS incorrectly, because if it was listed as a duplex, it would have been gone. It was listed as a single family, and yet there were two units on there, one in the front, one on the side. So the seller had wanted $93,000 for it. I ran the numbers, and I always run numbers conservatively. So I'm sitting here like 70. Not that I really knew what I was doing, but I wanted to give myself so many layers of cushion for my mistakes that I knew I was going to make. I was like, 70 is the sweet spot. And apparently he had had enough of this property. So he accepted 70. Wow. And then we go, we get it inspected, and I get it for 67 after the inspection, just because I was sitting here looking at some cracks in the concrete, like, oh, those are trip hazards. What do I do? I'm going to have to re-pour concrete. Man, look, no, you don't. But I had that fear, you know, and for me to feel comfortable moving forward, I still had to go in there and, you know, make these concessions because, again, we had $6,000. We didn't really have that kind of, you know, money to do these things. The seller accepted. And it appraised for $104,000. So $6,700 for plenty of equity. I was able to go in there and we just purchased it out. And I'll kind of speed up the next deal. At this point, the bank says, hey, Lee, look, the body that governs credit unions, we can no longer lend based on loan to value. It has to be on a loan to cost basis. So you're going to have to bring 20% down to every deal. And I just kind of went, well, that kind of messes up what I'm trying to do here. So what do we do? And when my mom had passed away, I had inherited 20 acres in my hometown, just raw undeveloped land that never really held any value to me. I didn't see anything with it. But I asked my banker, I said, look, what could I do? I've got 20 acres down here. Do you think that the bank would let me secure a line of credit with this? And then I could just purchase cash and refinance? And she's like, yeah, actually, yeah, you can. I said, great, let's do it. And with that being said, we rolled it up. They gave me a $77,000 line of credit based on the value of the land. And I was like, all right, now it's time to take off. Purchase cash, refinance, right? And now I teach people how to build that equity in their existing rentals, doing the small stuff so that they can leverage that debt going forward or leverage a line of credit going forward. But all that to say, then a sixplex comes up. So six units come up. The seller, she had inherited it from her grandfather, lived in one unit, didn't like it. She wasn't a good landlord. She had one person in the fourplex that was in the front. He wasn't paying rent. He was occupying the space. She lived in one unit, and then she had a nursing student who was about to leave. And all she knew was that she did not want to be in there. Well, my realtor, Matt, gives me a call. He's like, hey, I'm going on this listing appointment. It's off market. You know, would you be interested in this? And I just went, yeah, let's see what we can do. Because I knew that she was wanting like $300,000 for this. And going through, we ended up negotiating it down to like $224,000. And the bank, at this point, it had to get tricky, right? So the bank that I started with wasn't the bank I could continue with at this deal because I didn't have access to funds that I was aware of to do a purchase like this and refinance. However, so I go to another lunch meeting with a lender. We discuss it and I say, man, look, I've got this and I've got these two properties and I've got this line of credit. And he sits there and to this day, I just remember him scribbling notes that all looked like, you know, Greek to me. But he's like, yeah, we could do this and we'll bundle this here and we'll have this and you'll actually have $130,000 line of credit on top of it. And I went, yeah, sure. Sounds good. So we jump in there and now within our first year, we're up to 10 units. Right. And that's when we were like, there's something to this. The whole time I'm working over here, still selling commercial tires. And my wife, apparently she tells me this now. She's like, in the beginning, she was saying that, yeah, these are going to be great for our retirement. And the whole time I'm sitting here like, man, look, I don't like working. This is going to be great. Yeah. You know, so let's hurry up and just buy up everything. And that's where the first few deals and everything came from.
Yeah. And were you like cash flow positive on all 10 of those units right away? Well, was that a big part of the goal or?
It was a huge value add, right? So I had to go in there and bring up tenants. Basically go in there, rent it out. And our play was to occupy the space. So the owner even rented her unit back for 3 months while she found another place. So I was getting good market rents on that. everything there, it didn't cash flow as well as I wanted to because we still had to fill the units. But the beauty of that first property was no deferred maintenance. So fast forward just a couple years on that, after a 2-year hold, I ended up selling that one for $300,000. And it paid off our $70,000 duplex that my wife had found. And then because whenever you package, I'm sure you understand blanket mortgages to where the note's fixed, you know. So I was paying $2,301.20 a month. I remember that because I wrote that check so many dang times. But after that, you know, the principal reduction on selling that sixplex for the $300 and the principal reduction of selling off, I'm not selling, but paying off the $70,000 mortgage on that other duplex. Now we've got two doors owned outright. And then within a year, we had that other duplex paid off because we were paying $2,300 a month on a $35,000 mortgage, right?
Yeah.
So we went from 10 units in that regard to 4 paid off very quickly.
Wow.
And that's when just starting to see the compounding effect and the benefit of that came into play.
Yeah.
Well, I love the unpacking of those first couple deals, and I want to hit the different side of the coin there on those. You talked about how you dove into education, and you said something earlier, it gave you the confidence to start making moves. But I'm curious of what was kind of going through your mind and your thought process on those first couple deals, because a lot of times people, you know, they're on that sideline, and that's holding them back from jumping in the game. And you not only dove in and went after a deal or two, you landed 10 units in your first year. And so just talk through and maybe coach through somebody who's on the sideline and you know, you got the education side, but you still, you've said you got to take action. I mean, what role does that play in all of this?
I think a lot of it really, and the way that I coach people these days is be firm in your goals, flexible in the course. You know, so for me, knowing that I'm not some, you know, just advanced guru with access to tens of millions of dollars at my disposal back in 2015, what do I do? How do I still take action? Well, a lot of it was make very conservative estimates, you know, and start asking yourself, where could this come back to bite me? Oh, I don't like that exposure. So how do I offset that? And so I just reverse engineer my offers to get me to a point to where my comfort level was right there. So even today, well, I'll have to explain that a little bit more, but I always calculated, even though I self-managed, I held back 10% of rent for vacancy, 10% for management, 10% for maintenance, and then of course taxes and debt service and everything. And I targeted a cash flow of $150 a door per month. Mm-hmm. So once all that's in there, and if you go in, for example, a GRM or gross rent multiplier of, say, a 5-year payback, you stack all that together, reverse engineer it, and then carry your cash flow forward, it's almost hard to mess those up, right? To me, it's where these investors go out here and they don't make conservative approach. They go very optimistic. They go with a realtor that never has even bought their own personal house. They're just a friend of a cousin that, you know, is now real estate licensed and selling houses. Those people aren't necessarily going to be the best fit. I'm not saying that they're not good at what they do, but they might not understand the strategies of how to get you where you need to be. Mm-hmm. And understanding that you might need to make 20 offers to get one under contract, you know, and even then it could still fall out if the inspection period goes bad. But all that to say, I had some incredible people around me that understood that I'm not just going to be over here paying cash and just if it works, it works. No, I was going to be very conservative. And with that, I was holding back all of these different things that allow for my ignorance in this space until I get more sophisticated. Right. So that's what I would tell anybody else. If at one point you decide that you're going to take action, be so conservative in that you almost have to throw your hands up or, you know, do something extremely stupid. And I'm talking willfully stupid to mess that opportunity up. And until then, be patient. Analyze the deals until you can find that one. And then learn to negotiate, find the motivations, and see what you can do to bring the value to the deal. One other thing I would say is if you don't see where you can add value to a property, don't buy it. You know, that means it's already the juice ain't worth the squeeze, so to speak. So, you know, make sure that there's something there for you to add to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the super helpful advice on that front. And I'm curious just then how, after your first year or so, I mean, that's a quick start getting 10 units under management, owning 10 units in your first year. And that was about 2015 that you got started.
Yeah.
Okay. So then, you know, in the basically decade now that you've been doing this, how has your portfolio changed? And, you know, what kind of growth have you felt like you've seen just in terms of as you've grown in sophistication as an investor even?
I still wouldn't call myself sophisticated. But,
hey, from our perspective, you're sophisticated. Yeah, so well, we're learning and benefiting. Yeah, more sophisticated than us.
I think a lot of the times what it comes down to for me is, you know, never feel like you've got this mastered. Always say, look, there are risks all around me. There's danger here. So, you know, proceed with caution, just like anything else that you do. Mm-hmm. But since then, you know, I got licensed in 2017 because that 2015 to 2017 stretch, I'd left selling tires and I went to work selling software. So instead of like breaking my back, delivering 150 pound plus tires, I was able to go in here and sell software over the phone to companies. And I loved it. I'm telling you, I had the supervisor that I was going to ride to retirement with. This guy was coming in here. He would help negotiate the deals. He would cover for us. I mean, he would make last minute calls on the last day of the quarter to get somebody to stretch, carry forward a deal so that we hit our numbers, which he hit his numbers too, let's be honest. But all that to say, he was that guy. So he taught me the value of being that relationship consultant in sales. Then he decides he's going to go back out into the field. And I get this guy that I tell people he's like Steve Jobs without the talent. And it was apparently like he loved like influencing you with fear and threats of like job loss and all this other stuff. But yet this was just a stepping stone for him so that he could get a higher level of corporate. He didn't care about the team. Right. And that's where it was probably November of 2016. I was that one bad day away. Like I said earlier,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So that one bad day hit, and I came home and I told my wife, I said, you know, this isn't going to be for me much longer. And my realtor at the time, Matt, now my business partner, had made it look so easy. You know, I was just like, I'm going to go and be a realtor. I wish I would have known now. But all that, I went and I started this online course, right? So I'm taking my real estate licensing online. And in February of 2017, I became a licensed realtor. And this guy, every day, he was my motivator. And I mean, still to this day, hey, John, how you doing? I'm still all right. I had to give a shout out in case he comes across this. but all that to say, I would go and now in 2017, I got licensed. Now was time to separate from the job. We had picked up a couple properties during this time from 2015 to 2017. We had started getting some single families and started getting more comfortable acquiring. I think at that point we were probably up to like 9-10 doors because of the sell-off, right, of college. So I got licensed and my days changed and they started looking like wake up at 5 a.m., work until 7, shower, get ready. And that work until 7 was my work. Right. That's me building my business for myself. So I took it very seriously. From 7 o'clock, I'd go get ready, go to work, get into the office, make my calls until my 10 a.m. break. From 10 to 10:15, I'm returning texts and calls real quick in my truck, trying to line up showings or do anything that I can to build up business because I knew I had to get away from this one. And then I would go back in, work until lunch. Lunch would be showings if I had them scheduled. Otherwise, I'm looking in the MLS. I'm seeing what deals can be done, making phone calls, just running around like a chicken with its head cut off. I had no idea what I was doing, but damn, I was scrambling to do it. And then I would come back in, work until my 3 o'clock break, same thing. And after 5, that's when I was back on my time, right? So I would go do the showings. I would go walk properties and everything else. And then I would get home generally between 8 and 9 p.m. at night. And it took until it was June of 2017 for me to have gotten a couple sales under my belt. And now I'm walking around, and I even remember going to the office snitch. And I say that respectfully, but that's who it was. If you wanted somebody to know some business, she was the one that you let overhear it. Right. And I remember just walking through with confidence, man, I just wish he would get it over with. And all of a sudden she just, what do you mean? I'm like, John, I feel like he wants to fire me, but he just won't do it for some reason. I just wish that he would. And that was on a Friday. And that Monday morning, guess who got called into the office? So we went in there. We just kind of had a talk. And even though we were getting close to Q2 or end of Q2, he was like, well, you know, would you, if I continue to pay you through the month, would you stay accessible to us? Don't come in, but would you stay accessible if we have questions on your accounts? And I went, yeah, you're going to pay me to just be available by phone. You got it. So that was the separation. And that's whenever I went full time into real estate sales. Since then, I've done over 500 transactions and it's never looked back, right? Just expanded into other realms in that space. So that's probably your unsolicited answer as to what, you know, what kind of caused that.
Yeah. And I love that line. I mean, it is consistent with a lot of other things you've said so far, but just that mentality of never look back, you know, keep making progress.
Learn the boat. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that, I mean, it sounds like that mentality has served you really well in continuing to press forward and keep that optimism in you know, wherever you're going, whatever you're doing. As the market has shifted, I mean, from 2015, you had some amazing COVID years, and now in the last couple of years, you've been seeing crazy high interest rate stuff. There's really two questions in this. One is just, you know, how does the ever-changing market make you adapt your own investing strategy? And then two, talk to us a bit about just the fund, the private lending, that whole side of your business and how that all came about as well.
It's actually kind of hand in hand, to be honest with you. When COVID hit, you know, obviously as the real estate market, just the prices went into asinine levels. It was great to be a realtor. Even inexperienced realtors were out here, you know, next thing you know, they're the next influencers, right? They're out here selling. It's easy to sell in an up market, right? Thankfully, I was trained to sell in a down market. So that means that even when things are tough, you can still make your sales. Now, that being said, when the prices go up, now it's no longer feasible for my lowball strategy of acquiring properties. So our deal flow got interrupted. And I was sitting around one day. I had done a transactional funding for a wholesaler who needed to, had a deal that he didn't want the buyer to find out how much he was making because of the fact that he knew that buyer was going to say, come on, man, you don't need to make more than $5,000 on this. Just let me, you know, let me go ahead and lowball you, basically. So he's like, hey, look, I need to borrow $20,000 for a day. I'm like, $20,000 for a day? Let me think. Would you pay back $22,500? He's like, yeah. So I said, bet. You know, I mean, I'm going to give you one day money and you're going to give me back that return. Let's work. And it happened, you know, so it went off without a hitch. We recorded it with a promissory note, one day balloon, everything that would have protected me. So it wasn't just an unsecured loan. So I went to my bank. I drew down this line of credit that I had grown from that, I think the 120 at that point. Now I could draw down because over the deals, right? We had added equity and it snowballed to a little over 300K at that point. So I went, pulled the 20 from the bank, knowing that I'm going to pay, I think it was roughly 6% interest on that for 1 month. But whenever you're making that kind of return, who cares?
Yeah, right.
So that happened. And then the wheel started turning as the COVID prices came. And I told my wife, I said, you know, just because our deal flow is interrupted doesn't mean that other people's is interrupted as well. So why don't we just kind of carve out a chunk of this and I'll loan out money as people come to us for these deals. So I started letting other investors know, the ones that I knew were good at what they were doing, but maybe wanted to have more speed, more velocity behind them. And I said, hey, look, you know, I'll loan these out to you. It's going to be first lien. I don't do anything tricky because I didn't know much about it, right? So I'm still learning, but taking action at that time. All I knew was I wanted to be in a position to take that property from somebody if they messed up. And I was only going to lend on properties that I personally would want, you know? So that was my entrance into the private money lending. And then over the next couple of years, especially last year, I guess social media presence. And, you know, again, I try to add education to share these things with people because one of the, and we'll, I'm sure we'll talk about it. I love for people to see, you know, yes, it can be done and I'm going to show you how to do it. And, you know, with that education, I try not to just have that $50,000 paywall that, you know, some of these courses want from people.
Right.
So all that to say, I started going out there doing this and then people would come to me more and more. And then here comes a Google form. It's like, now tell me about your deal, you know, because you have to protect your schedule. So I can't just take random phone calls all day and educate. Right. So we started doing that and then the deal flow comes and it grows and grows to the point to where I couldn't service it. Even our expanded line of credit, I just didn't have that much capital. So then I reached out to a couple other people that were, I say well-heeled, but they're liquid, right? And they're looking to get returns. So I was going over just brokering these out whenever my funds are personally tapped. You know, I would go over here and I'd say, hey, look, I've got somebody that needs 200. You know, it's going to be a 12%. I'm going to get 3 points on it. Do you want your 12% loan? And they're like, yeah, absolutely. So then I started saying, all right, well, great. And then I started brokering more and realizing I'm still leaving a lot of money on the table. I can still provide great value and great returns for people once I set up a fund. I just want to make sure that I'm SEC compliant in doing so. And that's where now that part of the journey has kind of started coming along to now I've been navigating that. And we're actually in the process. We should hit legal by mid-month or by mid-March just to go through and get all the docs.
That's exciting.
Yeah, no, it's super exciting. Yeah. And I love the how that was born out of the ability to pivot. And we've talked a little bit about what 2019, 2020, 2021 brought for businesses and your story, you know, but I saw that so many times as a banker is, you know, people who were willing to take their skill set, adapt, adjust, and pivot, you know, those are the people who now looking in 2024 are doing well. And so from a banker's vantage point, I've seen that. And so I love that that's part of your story as well was, you know, thinking about all the way back to casino days and you're like, I don't have a resume. I don't have a skill set. I don't know all the way to now you're actually raising money. You're putting a fund together. It's just an incredible journey. And so I love that. I mean, I love the pieces that have come together here. What have been some challenges, maybe new challenges as you've jumped into creating the fund that you've had to work through?
That old friend imposter syndrome, you know, of, you know, even going back to the first seminar I ever taught, I remember going before then, and this was just a room of about 20 people, right? I was going to teach them how to analyze rental properties. And, I remember being in a room away from it, just kind of like, I'm talking battling myself, you know, like just the questions of what gives you the right to stand in front of these people. And then finally I just had to say, you know what? If I didn't have anything valuable to say, nobody would be here to see it, right? And then understanding that I had the same imposter syndrome whenever I would start doing lives and walkthroughs and everything else. So it's not that it's ever going to go away. And I'm facing the same thing as I go to create this fund. I've had amazing people in my life to where they're putting me in rooms that if they knew who I, you know, or where I came from, my background, they would say, or at least that imposter syndrome tells me, like, no, there's no way this kid should be in this room. You know, I mean, I've met billionaires and shook hands with these people and learned about their stories and everything else to go with it. And now they're in my circle, you know, and can I call them up because I have a flat tire? Probably not, you know, but that being said, but I didn't know these people before I went on this journey. And all of that to say, you know, getting in the rooms and really, really kind of quieting that voice of you don't deserve this, you don't belong here. that's the challenge that still today I face. I just learned to ignore it. And, you know, there's that whole fake it till you make it kind of concept. So I implement a little bit about that. And sorry if I just completely derailed your question. But I would say that imposter syndrome is probably the worst thing that I've been dealing with.
Yeah. No, I appreciate the honesty on that. I mean, I think that it's everybody, I think, when we're honest, is we're growing in positions of leadership, people looking up to you, looking to you for advice, for coaching, for education. I think everybody, if they're honest, should acknowledge that, yeah, who am I to speak to what you should do with your life and your money and your finances? And so, but I appreciate the humility. I think that that serves you really well in being able to relate to those who are coming to you and to truly serve them. Far worse to have a highly arrogant teacher that thinks that they know everything, but, you know, can't actually put themselves in your shoes or remember back to a time when it was a struggle, when it was a grind to get your first deal or whatever it is going.
Well, the one thing that I do realize is that we all will return to dirt eventually. So that being said, since we're all going to have the same destination at one point, what makes us any better than the other? Right. Yeah. And I think that's where, you know, and I've seen these people come up that, you know, they started much, much slower than I did. And then they just hit the gas and they went on. And I'm so excited for those people because of the fact that, you know, I want to see people's journeys improve. The worst thing that you could do is just be somebody that goes through life and goes through the motions and looks back and says, well, you know, his tombstone's going to read that he was a hard worker. You know, that, to me, that's a horrible ending, you know, to a story. Is that that's all you left was that you were a hard worker. But anyway.
No, I think that's good. And I wanted to pivot there, you know, because we've talked a little bit in the past here on the why and what keeps you going. And, you know, again, I think about your story. You've shared that there's the family component and the significance of your folks. But thinking along those lines of the why and what is it for you? I mean, you don't have to do the fund. I mean, you can keep doing the wholesaling. You can keep building the portfolio. You can keep being a real estate agent. And you've been really successful at that. So what is driving you to keep going? What's really pushing you to not only continue to learn, but continue to build relationships and try to help people?
A lot of it, I think, is because of the goals that I've got, right? And I've got goals that that I tell people, man, I'm uncomfortable telling people about. And that doesn't necessarily mean that it's the small-mindedness of people around me, but my goals are just so lofty that it's intimidating. You know, one of the things that I want to do with a portfolio is provide or gain a portfolio of properties that are self-sustaining and that they pay for the overhead expenses, not only of the portfolio, but also go in and provide a restaurant in a community to where it doesn't matter if you're in a three-piece suit or if you're homeless or houseless or whatever term you want to use for that. But it's to battle food insecurity, you know? So why not grow? Because, I mean, yes, I've done well enough to where I could have a comfortable life, but why not grow a life to where whenever I'm done with my toys and everything else and I pass it along, right, that it just makes amazing impact. And it's not so much about having my name on a building. I don't care about that. But what I care about is that ripple. You know, what are we really leaving somebody? Now, I can leave somebody a car, can leave somebody a house, I can leave somebody a property. But at the end of the day, what did you truly leave them that makes them better? You know, and I think that's what keeps me going is because, hell, I've done so much in such a little amount of time. I don't know how many more days I've got in front of me, but I'm going to see how cool I can make it. You know, so that's probably my why.
Yeah. No, that's incredible. And I, obviously, you're a great fit with Nick and I and the Abundant Journey podcast because of that abundance mindset of just that it's like, hey, I'm not just about building just a comfortable life for myself, but I do want to see human flourishing as far and wide as I possibly can and want to contribute to that in whatever ways. And so that is awesome with what you're doing. I want to maybe take a little bit of a step back, maybe just more practical, but on the private equity side, the fund, you used a term earlier about for investors having access to private equity adds to their velocity in which they're able to do more deals. And so for those that, I think private equity is becoming more common in our current, you know, mortgage rate, high rates, all of that. But for those that are less familiar, can you speak to the advantages of working with somebody like yourself or just what opportunities there are that, that private equity opens up for them?
Yeah. Well, one of the main things, let's just talk, for example, a fix and flip. And this is the way that I've approached and the way that I operate. Somebody comes to me with a fix and flip that, as it stands today, is worth $200,000. But for some reason, they negotiated and they knocked it out of the park and they are under contract for $100,000. So they're at 50% loan to value, which anything less than that would could be Liz Pendens in certain states. So be careful about those things. Side note, ADHD. Going back to it, let's say that you've got this great, great deal. Yeah, you just might not have the steak, right? You've got the plate, you've got the fork, you've got everything else, but you just don't have the steak to eat. So I'm the guy that's going to come over here and I'm going to provide the steak because there is so much equity that I would take this deal if you mess up. And as a matter of fact, if you have another $100,000 and you're going to make this ARV or this after repair value $350,000, why wouldn't I finance that for you too? So instead of going to your traditional bank methods where they're going to say, look, we do have a fix and flip product. We're going to need 20% down. We'll do construction draws and everything else. You come to me, and again, the market that I'm in, so long as it's one that I'm comfortable with. Otherwise, we'll go and we'll get a BPO or we'll get an appraisal or something like that. But I'm going to operate just outside of the bank's guidelines to where I'm not restricted to requiring you to bring 20% down. I look at your deal and I look at your experience and I say, look, you've had 8 exits within 5 years. You've got a FICO score of 750. You know, you're a solid borrower. You've got reserves. You just simply aren't trying to deploy those right now. I'll fund your deal. I'm still going to do contract draws, and I'm not going to go over here and just say, look, here's $200,000. Call me when you got it ready. I'm not an idiot in that regard. I'm thinking through a lot of things. But I'm also kind of aware, you know, of trying not to be hustled, right? So I'm going to guard myself, and I'm going to force you so much that I might give you 100% of the purchase, and then I might give you a 10 to 15% initial draw so that you can do your demo carpentry, and we'll do a draw schedule based on the rest of the project. And that's just mainly for me to keep insulating myself from risk further and further and further until completion. So that if you mess up on your last deal, I'm going to come in here, I'm going to blue tape it, I'm going to button it up, and I'm going to take your profit. And I'm just very blunt about that. So I tell people, you know, let's just do things correctly, and you're going to be all right. But I've noticed that there's so much money that's just outside of the bank's guidelines that can be made on the lender side, but also it can allow these other investors to come in and say, you know what, I can do this. I might not have all this money, but if I have that, well, the ability to negotiate, and negotiate well, then great. Because it all kind of, the premise is if you can control one of two things, the price or the terms, you can make a deal happen, right? So somebody that might be able to get the terms and the price, then I can go in there and I can provide that solution for them. So that's why people come to me, is because of also the ease of funds, right? I can typically underwrite in a day when it's a market that I'm familiar with. I can run the comps. I can trend out, you know, what the absorption rates are in the market. And I can say, hey, look, right now in this price point that you're targeting your ARV, we're sitting on about a 6 month supply with average 80 days on market. Are you prepared for these holding costs? You know, and them sitting there saying, yes, I've already allowed for that here, here, here. And I'm like, great, cool. Let's go. We got the deal. Otherwise, it's kind of one of those things to where we'll take a more conventional approach with a hybrid, you know, strategy of the way that we fund it. Yeah, we're going to go and we're going to have an appraiser come out. And we're going to get an as-is and as-complete value of opinion or opinion of value, sorry, and then we'll proceed, you know, classically. But I'm not going to make you jump through all the hoops of everything else to get that to happen.
That's a super helpful summary of just what kind of opportunity you open up for folks. And hopefully for a lot of our listeners, I know that a lot of them are, as they're starting to get into real estate investing, that fix and flip is kind of a number one place for a lot of them to go. But there is such a question about, all right, how in the world am I going to finance this thing? Because either it might not qualify for a conventional loan because it won't appraise because it's missing certain things that it needs, or just even if it did, there's so many hoops and things to jump through. So it's amazing that you've got both the speed and terms that can really be beneficial to
a lot of folks. Just a quick addition to that. If you're listening to this and you start going out and you go into Facebook and you're saying, hey, look, all these private money lending groups, they're all right here. Look at all this private money. Don't be a sucker, right? So start looking at the people that are posting and ask a question. You're going to get flooded. That's just like being somebody that, you know, says, hey, look, I've got this. Please take advantage of me. No, watch out in these groups. Look for people that, number one, if they have, and this is no slight, it's just something that I look at whenever I'm reviewing somebody. So it's not a hard rule. But if you're at gmail.com or at Yahoo or at AOL, if you don't have a business email yet, you promote yourself as a business, I'm going to take it a step further in my due diligence to vet you as a legit lender, right? So that's just one thing. If they can't invest $20 for a domain and a, you know, $10 a month email, I'm looking for that. Number two, if you have a social media profile yet it's blank, red flag, right? So what are you hiding? So I, as a point, make my stuff public. You know, you can go into my Facebook, you can go into my TikTok and everything else, and it's all right there because I want them to see I'm a legit person. I'm just real. I'm authentic. Love Jesus, but I cuss a little, you know, just those kind of things. Right. So they're going to learn these things about me. So in these groups, whenever you go to find people that, you know, that have these blank profiles or these very generic copy paste formats to their stuff, be leery of them. I'm not saying that they're all bad or all scammers. Just be leery and be aware of the risk that you're taking on.
That's good. Well, that's good. And that's good in anything in life, right? Not just real estate lenders. So no, well, this has been great, Lee. Let's land this plane here pretty quick with our golden nugget rounds. And if you're cool with that.
Yeah, man. It's good. Your show. I'm just
telling you. No, I love it. No, that's great. Well, we always throw these at our guests here at the end of the show with the same questions. So I'm going to dive right in here. And we've covered a lot of these today, but I love going a little bit deeper. So we talk about the five F's of abundant journey. I just want you to pick one of these for me and talk about how you're working to grow this year. So we got family, finance, faith, fitness, and future. So what's one of those you're focused here on 2024?
Well, we're just going to go ahead and say the call that I was on before you guys. We'll say fitness. So, and I'm not saying like going to Muscle Beach and working out, but for 4 months last year, I had difficulty walking unassisted. And I was diagnosed in November with moderate degenerative osteoarthritis in the knee and ankle. And That being said, it was like, man, I'm 44 years old, you know, that needing replacements, it's not good, right? So right now I'm focused on, you know, what they call medical tourism. So I'm researching companies to go and get stem cell treatments to improve my mobility. Mm-hmm. And with that, to allow me to get back to a stage to where I can actually go and, you know, even lose more weight. So I know you probably can't tell right now. I haven't really missed any meals, but you know, at one point my heaviest, I was 338 pounds. So today, you know, not putting too much out there, but let's just say I'm over 80 pounds lighter than I was. And, you know, I want to keep that going in the right direction for longevity. And also, you know, just to be able to enjoy that life, right? To be able to go on these cruises, on these vacations, and not have to sit in a rascal scooter, you know, just because, oh, I've got a flare up in my knee. And I think that's why you hear that old adage of, you know, some people spend so much time making money that they spend all of their money buying back their health.
Yeah.
And, you know, I saw that, I was aware of it, and now it hits and I'm like, I've got to get this fitness done, because if I don't have the fitness, I can't make the money, right? I can't support my family. I can't donate to the causes that I want to donate whenever I'm not making the money that I need to make these things happen. And ultimately, there's a saying, the world is waiting on you to stop playing small. And I feel like unless I get my fitness and my house in order, I have no choice but to play small. And that's why fitness, I would say, this year is my primary driver.
I think that's solid. And I think that, you know, we talk about that often here on the show, because that piece, everything else stems from it. And so the focus and the effort and the intentionality around that just trickles to every other area of life. So that's a great share. Thanks for being honest with us on that and just being, hey, this is your journey. Next question here, and you've given us a lot of these already, but what's a quote from a book or mentor that stuck with you along your journey?
I would say the most powerful one, and this isn't really anyone I can attribute to. I've just heard it a few different times, but don't take advice from people you wouldn't trade places with, at least in the realm and in the advice that they're giving you. And I can tie that in by saying that whenever we first started in this journey in real estate, I'd spoken to an uncle, and I know that he never had any ill intentions in the way that he said this, but we were catching up and he's like, well, hey man, how you been? And we're talking, and I said, great, we're actually buying a rental property, believe it or not. And he was just like, oh, don't do that. Don't do it. That's just horrible. You're going to lose everything. And my first thing that I asked him was, you remember what I had when I started? because, you know, same family, you knew I was broke. But all that to say, I asked him, I said, when did you have rental property? I don't remember you ever having any. He's like, oh, no, I've never had any, but I've heard. And I just went, never mind. We're done with this aspect of the conversation. Let's talk about something else. Because that's the thing. If I allowed other people's fears to influence me, I'd never get anything done.
That's good. No, that's so good. Next one here. What's a dream or goal that you have that you've not been able to make happen yet?
Well, it's on track. But so one of the biggest things is for my wife's 50th birthday. We really enjoy a show called Below Deck. I think it's Below Deck, right? So it's where these people charter yachts for a week, and it's just this insane experience. And we've learned that, you know, the money for us that we make isn't about the things, right? It's not about having the Lambo in the front yard that you can stand and flex in front of. I couldn't fit in the damn thing anyway, so I don't care about it. But all that to say, I love the experiences. I love travel and those things. So my goal is, you know, for my wife's 50th, I want to charter one of those below deck yachts in the Mediterranean for her and a group of friends, colleagues, friends, and, you know, have that as that experience to where we can look back and say, wow, we actually did this. So that's probably more of a greedy kind of goal. Again, the more altruistic one would be the, you know, the hunger, the kitchens. You know, I don't want to say soup kitchens. I want it to be a true restaurant. I want people to be able to come in there and eat without feeling judged for their situation.
Yeah. No, I love both of those responses. And certainly on the below deck yacht, you're going to need to document your journey since you got your different social media handles up and running. We'll want to follow along. Last one here. At the end of your life, what do you hope you'll be remembered for?
I don't really know, because there's all kind of things that we want, right? But I guess the main thing is just more so knowing that I did something for people. Yeah. So let's see. I'll see if I can find it. But I wrote a book last year, and it was just small little primer on investing in real estate. And I love giving it away, mainly because I think that we have the power to be that catalyst for people, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I want to be remembered by a random Uber driver that I gave a book to, you know, and say, look, this guy changed my life. I might not ever know it, But I think that's important. Mm-hmm.
That's a powerful thing, man. I love that. And, we've had a few folks on, even recently last week, we talked with a guy who just published his first book. But I just think that that's one of the greatest ways to give to the world. I mean, it is such an intensive process to actually go through and write a book, no matter how long it is. Yeah. But it's also such an enduring work and really can add unbelievable value to people's lives. So I'm excited for the ways that everything that you're doing will catalyze many, many people, probably far more than you'll ever even have a full appreciation of, to have a brighter future ahead of them, to begin in investing or grow as investors. It's just really awesome, everything that you're doing. Congratulations on the fund. I know that that's got to be exciting in the next couple of weeks, having that all put together. And I can't wait to see how that grows and what other opportunities and doors that opens up for you. So we'll definitely want to stay in touch, definitely want to have you back on and follow up and just continue to hear how your journey progresses. But in the meantime, we've mentioned a couple of social media handles, channels. What are the best places for our listeners to follow along and to connect with you? Where would you have them go?
If you go to RE with Lee, so that's RE like really with Lee.com. I just launched this a couple weeks ago, actually. And depending on when people might hear this, I'm teaching a free wholesale challenge. It's just going to be a few weeks long, but it teaches people, hey, look, get out, take action, get it under contract. I'll help you get through the first deal just so you can start to learn in that realm, right? Because wholesaling's simple. But if you go to ariwithlead.com, should be on there, a wholesale challenge. You sign up for free, give you a free copy of the ebook or the electric version of my book so that you can read through that if you want to. And again, it's just trying to be abundant with people and say, hey, look, here it is. Here's as much free content as I can give you. And still on the same time, I have to protect my schedule so that I can still go out, generate, and grow. So please forgive me if you reach out and I decline as respectfully as I can your request to go to lunch. And I tell people, you know, catch me online, catch me at my lives, all these other things or any networking events I'm in. I give everything that I can freely. It's just that if you need to book one-on-one time with me, I do charge for that. But please take advantage of all the free content that I give.
100%. That's fantastic, man. And I will include links to your website, the RE with Lee, in the show notes below. I'll also find some of your social media channels and include links there so people can give you a follow along.
Be careful with the TikTok.
I'm not dancing. I was hoping I was going to see some viral dances with Lee. It's real estate and TikTok virality. But well, man, this has been such a fantastic conversation. Really wonderful to connect with you, to hear your story. Again, love what you're doing. Listeners, couldn't encourage you more to go and connect with Lee. Check out the website. Do sign up for that wholesaling challenge and learn along with him there. And while you're at it, also please subscribe to the show. Leave us a review. And the very best thing that you can do for us and for your friends is to go ahead and share this episode with somebody that you know and like and want to see advance in their own investment and journey and abundance. All right, y'all, that's all we got. We'll be back very soon.